We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. At some time or another, almost everyone has experienced a headache. Now, for a lot of people, it's a minor nuisance. At least it responds pretty well to over-the-counter pain relievers. But for the 28 million Americans who suffer from migraines, headaches can be painful and they can be life-disrupting events. This morning in this hour of the show, we'll be talking about headache. And our guest is Dr. Robert Cranston. He's a neurologist at Carl in Urbana. We will try to talk about the different types of headache, what some of the common triggers for headache are, and talk about some treatment options that are available for mild to major headache pain. And as we talk, as always on the show, questions are welcome. If you are in Champaign, Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number. We have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that. That's 800-222-9455. We also have email, so if you'd like to send along your question that way, you can do that. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We do a lot of different programs on health on the show. Sometimes we concentrate on specific topics. We also have a family medicine doctor who's here every other month. So we try to cover a lot of territory. And also I would hope, maybe I should mention here, as I try to do when we have doctors on the show, is that there are some limits as to what we can do here. We can't do diagnosis over the phone. But we hope people will take the opportunity, if they have particular kind of questions, just, you know, call in and let us have the question, and the doctor will do his best. Well, again, I certainly appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
According to some numbers that I was looking at, something like 45 million people here in this country have chronic recurring headaches. And often when you read about headache, chronic is one of those terms that comes up as being sort of a dividing line. And I guess what exactly does that mean?
Well, chronic basically means frequent. And a lot of patients end up having a headache almost every day. Depending upon the study and the definition, it could be as infrequent as once a week. But for many of those patients, it's daily.
I would certainly consider that to be chronic if you have a headache every day. I wonder where that line is. So maybe if you have a headache once a month, or maybe you have a couple of headaches a month, that would be on the lower end of the scale. But if you end up having a headache, say, once a week or every couple of days, then that's getting to be more like what you would consider to be chronic.
Yes. And the other part of chronic is the longevity of the whole pattern. If you've had daily headaches for 3 weeks, I don't think we typically refer to it as chronic. We'd call it subacute continuous, for instance, as opposed to chronic. But
well, and I'm sure that headache can be a symptom of a number of things, and some of them serious. What would be your concern that would be the problem, as opposed to something that would be part of a pattern that maybe people had experienced over a long time?
Well, when I was a neurology resident, they used to say that the history is 90% of the diagnosis. And it's exactly what you said in your word pattern. Migraine headaches, for instance, if you talk to people, there's usually a long pattern, whereas some of the more dangerous subacute headaches, like a brain tumor, for instance, or meningitis, it's usually a much shorter time frame. Temporal arteritis is a subacute problem that comes on within a fairly short time frame and can be quite dangerous. So you're really looking for the time history, and then you're looking for the characteristics of the headaches themselves, what the pain is like, where it's at, what goes with the headache. Nausea, vomiting, fever. Fever would be a big red flag. Your typical migraine does not have fever associated with it. So if you have a patient with a severe headache and fever, you would automatically move your diagnostic radar over toward the very dangerous, like infections. Meningitis would be a perfect example.
Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that you would say, well, that's an important sign, and if you see those two things together, you want to have medical attention. Other than that, would be the thing that would concern you most, perhaps a person who would say, well, I never really had a big problem with headaches, but then suddenly I got this blindingly painful headache. It just sort of came out of nowhere and kind of I felt like it kind of hit me like a bus. That would be the kind of thing that would concern you.
Absolutely. Significant change in pattern of headache. And another thing that neurologists often talk about is focality on examination. And what they mean is, are there specific deficits that could be blamed on specific regions of the brain? For instance, if the right side of my body doesn't work or if the right side of my visual field is blind, that's a focal deficit. And while that may go along with migraines, it is a scary sign that has to be kind of sorted out. It could be a brain tumor. It could be an abscess, something else.
Okay. It's when you read about headache, one of the things that it says is that all people of almost any age can have headache. Adolescents get them. Children get them. Adults get them. It seems to be, however, a little bit more common in adults. Is there a particular reason for that?
Well, it's an interesting question that you ask. Women, as opposed to little girls have about the same rate of headaches as little boys do. But when you pass adolescence, past menarche, women have headaches at about three times the rate of the teenage boys. And that holds true all the way through menopause and even somewhat beyond that. So there's definitely a hormonal factor. There may be some headaches in those little children, very small children, that we just can't understand and we can't communicate with them. So there's a little bit of that as well. But the estrogen and estradiol do make a big increase in headaches in general.
Yeah, and I'm sure that particularly for migraines, one of the common triggers for migraines in women is their menstrual cycle.
Absolutely. Those even have a special name. Sometimes they're called menstrual-related migraines, but then there's this Latin name, catamenial, is another term for. And it's worth noting that for those women, it doesn't have to be completely related to the menstrual period. It may be primarily related to the menstrual period and then have headaches other times in the month as well.
Yeah. Is there anything like that, any parallel sort of hormonal thing that's possible to be a trigger for headache in men? Or is there just nothing, there just really, for that specific thing, there's just really nothing like that for men?
Not hormonal as far as I know. Unless you were taking large doses of testosterone, perhaps, that might predispose you more toward headaches.
Our guest in this part of Focus is Dr. Robert Cranston. He's a neurologist at Carl in Urbana. We're talking about headache. We'll talk a little bit about the types of headache and how what we know about causes or at least common triggers about potential for treatment. And then people who are listening, you have certainly the option to call in with questions, and I know he'll do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You may also email will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have a couple of callers here, so let's do that. We'll start with Savoy. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
I have recently become aware of the fact that over the years, I've experienced what are called visual migraines.
Yes.
Complete with the circular pattern of flashing geometric patterns. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, at first, it was really quite frightening because I didn't know what it was. And over the years, they've recurred, and I've not had any consequences except for, you know, it's quite disorienting when they're happening. Is this something that I should be concerned about?
Well, you're actually opening up a whole area, and that's the area of migraine called migraine with aura. In the past, they were sometimes called classical migraine. And the auras can be lots of things. They can be visual phenomena. And in that category, they can be black and white. They can be presence of light or absence of light. They can be geometric figures, and they usually seem to move across the visual field.
Yes, they gradually expand and disappear.
Yeah. In fact, there's an old-fashioned name called fortification spectra, and it had to do, I believe, with the way that the Japanese generals set up their forts.
Yes.
For most people, the aura can actually be somewhat beneficial in a sense, because if it gives you reasonable warning that your main pain of the migraine is about to start, there are a number of medications that fit right into that little time niche. And if you take the medication as soon as you're beginning to see the visual aura, it often responds better to the medication than if you wait till you're completely sick and in terrible pain.
Well, I've never had any pain with these.
That's great.
I felt slightly nauseous and, of course, a little disoriented, but I think most of that was initially because of the fear of, you know, not having had this happen before.
Right. They have a name for your particular type of migraine. It's called acephalgic migraine, meaning no headache pain migraine. And you're fortunate in a sense, because now you know what they are. They're a little less frightening. And you're also fortunate in the sense that you don't have the horrendous blood-curdling pain that some people experience.
Yes, and over the years, they've decreased in intensity. They still happen on a fairly regular basis, but the full fortification, as you said, is not present. I'll see a slight flickering of color, and after a few minutes of pulsing, it'll disappear.
Fantastic.
So it's not progressing.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You bet.
Well, you point to something that's maybe for people who experience migraine is some small bit of encouragement, and that is that people apparently report that over time, as they get older, it seems that at least a lot of people say the severity of their headaches does decrease.
That's true. The vast majority of people, the severity improves over time. For many women, it's as they go through the far end of menopause. But as a general trend, the severity and the frequency both seem to drop off over the age of 65 or 70.
For people who experience migraines, is there an average age of onset?
Well, if we go back to adolescence, when girls go into menarche, when they begin having periods, that's a frequent time. But for a lot of adults, the bad headaches will show up in their early adulthood, but then if you talk to them, they'll say, I really have had headaches for as long as I can remember, or I remember when I was a little child missing parties because I was throwing up, might be another sign. So there's often a story of young adulthood, but if you dig a little deeper, there's often clues that go back into early childhood.
Next, we'll talk with someone on a cell phone. This is someone in Watsika, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi, yeah. David. Great show. Thanks for taking my call. I actually had two questions for the doctor, one very basic and the other. Wondering, not being initiated into this, I'm guessing, maybe the doctor can speak to this, I'm guessing headaches are caused by constriction of the blood vessels, but are there other root causes of headaches? And then my second question is, we talk about prevention and pre-screening for colon cancer and lung cancer, whatever. I had a friend of mine a number of years ago, he was 42, and got dizzy, thought it was something he ate. Anyway, turned out to be a very aggressive brain tumor, and within a matter of weeks, he was dead. And a friend of mine's mother was eating dinner, got up, said I felt dizzy. She had a brain abscess that ruptured, and within a matter of minutes, she was dead. So my question is there anything out there for pre-screening or screening, usually these things, when they do come on, they're fatal, they're sudden, they're horrific. And I was just wondering, would the doctor recommend any sort of pre-screening for these ailments? I'll go ahead and listen off air. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll take question number one first. And I need to preface it by saying I'm primarily talking about migraine. And the reason I would say that on question number one about causes, is the causes for migraine are completely different than some of the other things that you mentioned. Causes for migraine, primarily there is a genetic tendency, and you can track that. Often if you ask a young woman about her migraine and then her family history, she'll note that she had a number of family relatives, often women, with migraine headaches as well. So there's definitely a genetic component. And then there's a kind of an external environmental component. That would be weather changes, lack of sleep can be part of that. Personal stress, and then you kind of segue into internal environmental things, how you're dealing with stress, are you having good supportive relationships, how do you like your job, and things like that as well. But the bottom line is there's a genetic predisposition, and then there are often external factors of different sorts that push you over the edge. Stress, lack of sleep, weather, certain foods, certain beverages, and hormonal factors, of course, too. So I hope that answers your question on causes. The specific question you asked about vascular dilatation and contraction, that actually was an extremely popular theory, a physiologic explanation of migraine, back when I went to medical school in the 80s. But most neurologists don't believe that anymore. They believe that a contraction phase is probably more of what's labeled an epiphenomenon, meaning it is true, but it's not directly related to the specific thing. It's more a side effect of other things that are happening. So the bit about contraction and expansion, there's some truth buried in there, but it's certainly not the whole explanation. As far as prevention goes, that's a tough one. If you told me that three of your first-degree relatives had died of a subarachnoid hemorrhage, for instance, we might talk about imaging your brain because you would, at that point, have a statistical predisposition to having a subarachnoid hemorrhage yourself. On the other hand, the vast majority of people that have headaches, there was no way to know in advance. Subarachnoids in general happen quickly, and you may die. About half the people that get them do die. On the infection front, people who are immunocompromised, for instance, diabetics, people who are on anti-rejection medications, people who have immune deficiencies of different sort, are certainly more at risk. People that work in certain settings, such as around birds or bats or other strange agricultural things, may be at different risks as well. They usually are aware of their increased risk, but not always. The good news is the vast majority of people that get a blinding headache out of the blue, do fine after a while. I mean, it isn't a life-threatening headache. But as you well represent, some people, it can be fatal.
All right. I hope that gets at the questions of the call. Let's talk with someone here in Indiana, line two. Hello.
Hello. In some ways, I feel like I shouldn't be asking this question because I'm one of those people that rarely has a headache. I've certainly never had a migraine, though people in my family have. I'm just wondering if there's some sort of physiological thing that you could explain what I'll say now. Every once in a while, I'll have a headache, and it seems to be localized. I can almost say, well, that's in the lower left quadrant of my head, or it may be more sense pointed at times. It goes away very quickly and never seem to have any problems with it. I've mentioned it every once in a while to my doctor and to a neurologist after I had a stroke, And they asked for, you know, keep track of a little follow-up, and nothing ever seemed to get out of whack in any way whatsoever. Just seems to be a headache every once in a while. And that earlier caller talked about arteries and veins, about dilation and expansion. I thought maybe perhaps that could explain what those things are. But never debilitating. I've never been brought to my knees or had anything that I would say approaching anything of pain like you might with a broken arm or something like that. But I just wonder if there's something to be said about those things that just occur occasionally. Thank you.
One of my older teaching physicians when I was a resident used to have a saying. He'd say, "We see that," and that was the end of the explanation. What you're saying is often seen, and we don't know exactly why that's true. There are some preventable factors, even in people that just have occasional headaches, like dehydration or lack of sleep or flashing bright lights or the glare off the water on the lake or the glare off the road. So there are some things like that, but many people have headaches and they look back over their day and they really can't think of anything that happened. There's a specific kind of headache, sometimes referred to as an ice pick headache, where there will be very pointed, you know, the person can put their finger right on the area and it feels like somebody's stabbing an ice pick right through their skull. And for many of those people with ice pick headaches, the pain will be brief, perhaps seconds to minutes. But the bad part of it is for many of those people, it's a recurrent phenomenon. The good news is that many people with ice pick headaches do respond to certain medications, so we do have some things to work with them. In your case, on the other hand, just having intermittent headaches, you know, I probably wouldn't treat it. I might ask you how much caffeine you drink and see if you might cut back a little bit, but that would be about it.
Let me ask you about caffeine, because I think this is a really interesting case, because for some people, caffeine can be a trigger for a headache. For people who get migraines, caffeine can be a trigger. But it's also the case that many medications, both prescription and over-the-counter medications for headache, have caffeine in them. And also, I suppose that there are people who will say, yeah, I'm used to having a certain amount of caffeine, and if I don't have it, I get a headache. What's going on?
Yeah, I think you're actually talking about two different scenarios, but the commonality, of course, is the chemical caffeine. People who imbibe in caffeine on a regular basis essentially become physically habituated to the drug. When they don't get it, they'll get a headache. Now, is this every single time? No. And that's what throws a lot of people off, because these things often aren't every single time. They're not that consistent, but there's a pattern. So the vast majority of neurologists, if they're trying to help somebody with a bad recurrent headache, the first thing they'll say is, let's get rid of the caffeine from your life completely. And not for a week, not for a month, but for 3 or 4 months straight. Some say 6 months. Once you do that, the actual frequency of the migraines will typically decrease, as will the severity. On the other hand, if you're the kind of person that really doesn't have much caffeine, would an occasional Excedrin migraine or some other medication with some caffeine in it be helpful? And the answer is absolutely. And it probably has something to do with dilating or constricting veins, or possibly the secondary release of neurotransmitters, such as one is called CGRP and another one is serotonin, dopamine. And I think there's a lot that we don't know. It reminds me of the saying, to every complex physiological phenomenon, there's a simple, straightforward explanation, which is absolutely incorrect. So I've heard reasons for this. And then a few years later, you hear the headache gurus say, well, that's really not true. Mm. So I don't know about that. As far as that last one, though, is if they are the kind of person who is habituated and for some reason they've missed their caffeine for a couple of days or all morning, would a medication with caffeine in it be helpful? Well, sure. It's kind of the hair of the dog that bit you, so to speak.
One other thing that occurs to me, and I'm not meaning to suggest to diagnose the last caller, but I guess that it may be also worth mentioning that there are a variety of things that can cause headache pain, or at least that kind of symptom, including issues with your teeth, your jaw, and your sinuses that can cause that same kind of pain.
Absolutely. And in fact, I had mentioned it just in passing very early, was this diagnosis of temporal arteritis. And that is where your own body is attacking the arteries within your own body, particularly those in your scalp and brain. And so that's a definite response. And it has nothing to do with primary headache disease. It has to do with an immunological phenomenon.
Well, we're about midway through this part of Focus. Our guest is Dr. Robert Cranston. He's a neurologist at Carl in Urbana. We're talking about headache. And if you have questions, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, we've had at least the one question about causes, and we know that there are certain triggers, but if you ask this question, so if you had somebody who said, I'm having a headache right now, and so then you brought them in and you did a brain scan, you looked at what was going on in their brain at that minute, would you see anything that would be interesting or would reveal something about what was going on?
Well, that's a fascinating question. The simple answer is not with a CAT scan, not with a typical MRI. However, there are other imaging modalities such as PET scanning, positive emission tomography, that could show some differences. And way back in the 50s, there was a physiologist in South America named Dr. Liao, and he described that if you have widespread electrical receiving wires on your head, like an EEG, perhaps with more leads, though, and you follow someone through a migraine, they will have a change in the voltage and the frequency of the electricity in different parts of the brain as it marches across. So it is very interesting. So you can track an electrical change in voltage and frequency coming across the brain. Is that clinically very helpful? Well, not particularly. But, I mean, it is interesting to confirm that this is not, something, quote, in their head. They're not just an anxious personality, for instance. There are biochemical and electrical phenomena that are occurring in a consistent pattern.
Mm-hmm. When somebody uses over-counter medication for pain relief and for headache, and there are a lot of them for a long, long time, the big thing probably was aspirin, and then we got acetaminophen, and then we got ibuprofen. So there are a number of those things, and when you go to that section of the store, you're confronted with an enormous wall full of different sorts of things. What do those things do? Why do they relieve the pain?
Well, you're getting into an area of pharmacology that I am not the world's best expert on. But essentially, they're changing prostaglandin levels, serotonin levels, and dopamine levels in your brain through a very complex mechanism. The other one, the CGRP, is another neurotransmitter that's released at the level of the brainstem, and it involves the trigeminal ganglion, which is another part of the cranial nerve setup. Anyway, these medicines are probably acting there. But again, perhaps we'll have a caller call in who's a neuropharmacologist and who will correct me and enlighten us all.
Well, and any out there who would like to call are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. There's a long list, particularly when it comes to migraine, there's a long list of things that are known to be triggers. And maybe we can talk about some of those other things. But one thing that I guess I want to single out, because it's also listed as being the main trigger for more common headaches, is stress. How much does stress contribute to people's headaches?
Well, they used to talk about stress headaches, and sometimes they talk about stress-type headaches. And so for a lot of people, if you're forced to sit next to someone who is an obnoxious personality and listen to them drone on, you may end up with a headache. So, I mean, in a sense, that's a kind of a stress. Migraines are similar in that if you are subjected to specific insults of a stress-type nature, you may be more prone to get a headache. But then there's another funny thing, and that is what you might call the stress letdown. So on a college campus, for instance, a number of the triggers might be sleep deprivation, stress letdown, and overuse of alcohol. And if you think about what I just described, that sounds like finals week, right? Staying up too late, studying, being worried that you're going to flunk the test, and then when the test is over, just kind of saying, hey, I'm fine, you know, I'll live, and then going out for some drinks with your friends. So those are a number of factors that can all go together. How does that happen? Probably, again, in this whole area that we don't understand, is levels of serotonin, CGRP, dopamine, norepinephrine, and histamine, tryptophan. There are just a whole host of CNS neurotransmitters that are involved in a complex dance.
Yeah. And that maybe also points to something that is another, for some people, can be another important trigger for headache, and that is breaks in your routine.
Absolutely.
You're used to eating at a certain time, you're used to getting up at a certain time, going to sleep at a certain time, that often when you break the pattern, that's going to be a time that you're going to get a headache.
Yes, that's absolutely true. In fact, when I have been talking with a patient and decided that they, in fact, do have migraine headaches, and then we move to the treatment phase of the discussion, I never begin with medications. I begin with an area that might be called headache hygiene. And by that, I mean, let's talk about when you go to bed and when you get up. Let's talk about how much exercise you get. Let's talk about what you eat. Let's talk about how you deal with stress. Let's talk about who you hang out with. So there are a lot of things that are part of the headache hygiene picture, including this idea of getting the right amount of sleep at the same basic hours on a regular basis.
Okay. Rook, I have a couple of emails here and some callers. Let me do one email question here that I think we could probably do pretty quick. Someone who is interested in having you talk about headaches related to insulin levels. And can you say something about that and also how to recognize and avoid them?
Well, one of the problems with low or high insulin is it may almost be asymptomatic until it's too late. So you can have low insulin and you may get a headache, but you can have low insulin and go directly into shock and never have any kind of warning. So I'm not sure that I have a good explanation for exactly why some of those headaches, some of those low levels of insulin may cause that. The same thing can happen with really high levels of insulin, and that would be you can be almost asymptomatic until you're extremely ill. Some patients will say, well, I can tell if my sugar's out of whack, but if they really sit down and document it over the course of a few months, they're not nearly as accurate as they think. How to prevent that, you know, eat in moderation, eat according to the schedule that you've worked out with your dietitian and your physician. Don't do a lot of substituting. Don't jack your dose around, but try to stay on track.
And it is true that, again, for some people, one of their headache triggers is going long periods of time without eating.
Absolutely.
So is there some relationship between, say, a big drop in your blood sugar level and your tendency to have a headache?
Well, interestingly, most people who fast like that, they don't have a horrendous drop in their blood sugar level because their body kicks back in and dips into other energy stores. And so it's not like your blood sugar is going to drop down to 25 if you skip a meal or two. Your body begins to correct that, and it's a homeostatic system where it brings it back to where it belongs.
Some other callers here. Let's get back to the phones, and next we'll talk with someone in Mattoon. Line 4.
Hello. Hello. I got in just a little bit late. You may have covered this, but I'm 84, and about a year and a half ago, I started getting, I guess what you call the auras. It starts on the right, and they're going to see wavy things, and then maybe stars, and things are moving around, and my optometrist told me it was some kind of migraine, and I was worried that it might be something like a TMI, maybe a symptom of a stroke coming on, because they do run in my family, and they seem to occur maybe once or twice a month, and they seem to occur after I do something physical. And I just lay down or sit down, pardon me, and in about 20 minutes, they work their way across, making getting larger and larger from right to left, and then in about 20 minutes, they just disappear. And at first, I took a couple of aspirin, and that seemed to help some because it quit. But then later on, why I didn't, and the time frame is about 20 minutes. Is there any possibility that stroke is involved here someplace?
Well, let me just ask a couple follow-up questions before I attempt to answer this. Do you have a history of other types of migraine through the course of your life?
No. So it's just... I don't have any pain, no headaches or anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask that is some people who have one type of migraine, the migraine can evolve over time and it can change. If that were the case, if you had a long history of other types of migraine, then this would bother me less. The fact that this is relatively new and a very stereotypical pattern is concerning and probably deserves an evaluation by a physician or perhaps even a neurologist. As far as transient ischemic attacks, TIAs, which are like strokes, only they don't last as long, the vast majority of TIAs are not significantly characteristic and repetitive. For instance, they won't always be the exact same thing. And yours sound highly stereotyped. Since yours are so highly stereotyped, I suspect that your optometrist is right. And if the rest of your neurological exam is completely normal, then it may just be a benign phenomenon. Migraines can start at the age of 84, although that's out of the ordinary. One other point before we move on to the next caller is you mentioned aspirin possibly helping. It just brings up the point that headaches come and headaches go, and you take something and then you're never really sure if what you took was responsible for the headache leaving. And a lot of people in their minds establish cause and effect, but you wisely said, well, I'm not sure that it really is involved. So I think we do have to be careful about assuming causation when it may just be association instead of causation.
Well, I haven't been taking anything within the last year, but they don't occur very often. They've never occurred when I'm driving a car. They've never occurred when I'm out in the yard working. It's maybe something in the house. I do something physical.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's roughly about 20 minutes. They seem to go away.
Well, good for you. It does sound like an acephalgic migraine, but as David mentioned early in the show, I certainly wouldn't attempt to make a formal diagnosis without seeing you and going through the story more carefully.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks. It is the case, it can be the case that physical exertion can bring on a headache for some people.
Absolutely. And that can show up in several different ways. It can show up in the form of dehydration. But there are also exertion-related headaches, which often respond very well to beta blockers. And so why do they respond so well to beta blockers? Typically, many of those are a form of migraine, and the exertion is only the trigger. So chemically, we assume they're pretty much like the other migraines. But why the beta blocker does such a great job in stopping those is not entirely clear. Calcium channel blockers seem to help those. In both situations, the medications would be taken on a consistent basis, not at the time of the headache.
Okay. Other callers. Bloomington, Illinois, next. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had two questions. If I understand you correctly, you mentioned that I have a friend that had that and she almost lost her sight.
Temporal arteritis. Yes, you're correct.
Yes. And so you can. And then my mother had both migraine headaches and trigeminal neuralgia. And are they related or, and she just suffered terribly. I just wondered how she could have both,
Yeah. Well, let me go back to your first point, which is can temporal arteritis, or it's sometimes called giant cell arteritis, can it cause blindness? And the answer is unfortunately yes, and in fact it can even cause death. So it does have to be taken very seriously. The good news is it responds quite dramatically to oral prednisone for many, many of those patients. So there definitely is a treatment.
Mm-hmm.
In response to your second question about the comorbidities, what goes along with a migraine? And there are a number of things that go along with migraines. Depression does. Sleep disturbances often do. There's an increase in fibromyalgia among some migraine patients. But having said all that, I have not heard of a specific comorbidity between trigeminal neuralgia and migraines. In trigeminal neuralgia, the fifth cranial nerve, as it comes out of the brainstem and comes toward the face, is being irritated by something. We typically believe it's probably an artery that's physically touching the nerve or conceivably some type of virus that is irritating the nerve. But the physiology of that kind of headache is quite different than a migraine. The good news is trigeminal neuralgia in the right hands is very treatable. There are a number of ways. And so if you know someone with that kind of terrible pain, that kind of story, there are things that could help them. And so I'd encourage you to talk with your family physician about possibly getting in to see a neurologist for that.
I have a friend that has a electrical implant to control the pain for that.
For trigeminal neuralgia?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. I don't know. There may be a newer treatment then, evidently.
Well, there are a number of pills that seem to help. There are some types of injections, and then there's actually a type of a skull-based surgery where they go in and examine the fifth cranial nerve as it comes off the brainstem.
They did that with my mother, and it did help.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. On to another caller here. This is someone in Monticello, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a rather odd question for you. When I was a boy, between probably 6 and 12, 13 years of age, I used to get some tremendous headaches, usually brought on by exertion and overheating, perhaps dehydration, as you just mentioned. The only thing that ever seemed to help with those headaches, and it was quite effective, was an over-the-counter drug that is no longer available. I used to take things, my mother would give me aspirin or Alka-Seltzer or something like that, and we discovered this bromo-seltzer, which is no longer sold anywhere that I know of. Do you have any idea what might have been in that that old over-the-counter drug that might have been so effective for my headaches?
I'm still waiting for our neuropharmacologist to call in and enlighten us on a few of these things, I'm afraid. A number of those over-the-counters did involve aspirin or acetaminophen as part of it. Bromo-seltzer had a certain amount of bromide in it, but I don't know how much bromide, and I don't know if aspirin or acetaminophen was involved. But it does bring up an interesting point, and that is that if you talk with lots of people with migraines, a number of them will tell you what you might call idiosyncratic stories, meaning stories about things that really make a difference for them. And so we often begin when we're treating someone with migraines by having them keep a very careful diary for, 4 to 6 weeks, looking for any kind of triggers and any kind of things that cause good relief for the headache. And the things that work for some people often don't work at all for other people. So it's a complex thing. And again, I don't have a full explanation for that.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Well, apparently here, according to the Wikipedia, the font of all knowledge, Bromo-Seltzer has acetaminophen in it. So it could be that someone who's had that experience with Bromo-Seltzer could take Tylenol and maybe get the same experience. But who knows? It could be something having to do with the other things that are in that. Apparently, it's acetaminophen, sodium bicarbonate, and citric acid.
All right.
Is what's in there. So there you go. So other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's an email from someone. Sounds like something like maybe an earlier caller. She says, I'm a 55-year-old female who once or twice a year experiences sharp pains in the upper right side of the head. They can occur every few seconds, minutes, or even hours apart and last 5 to 8 days, decreasing each day. The pains are sharp. They feel like lightning hitting my head. My health is very good overall. I have no chronic conditions. I usually limit my caffeine intake to 1 cup of coffee per day. I have no other symptoms. Don't think they're related to stress. They can occur in any season. And she says she's had these kinds of headaches for years and wonders, should you be concerned?
Could you clarify for me when a specific pain, I guess we're talking to an email here.
Yeah, I'm afraid given you all the information that I have, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, the reason I was going to clarify is there are a couple things that sound somewhat like this. One is called cluster headaches. Cluster headaches typically occur behind one eye. It can be absolutely horrendous pain, and it is often seasonal in nature. It may involve reddening of the eye, running of the nose, and this is the kind of headache that used to be called a suicide headache sometimes because the pain can be so severe. Mm-hmm. For these people with clusters, it can be seasonal. It can also be stereotypical to a specific clock in the day. So some patients will say, well, my headache hits my left eye at 4 p.m. every day and it lasts 30 minutes. That would be an example of a cluster. The way that she is describing this is coming on quite seasonally. You almost wonder, too, about something in the environment if she's around certain types of plants or pollen or whatever that may be triggering some things. Usually those kinds of allergy headaches, though, are milder and longer through the course of the day, so they don't hit in short little lightning bolts, but they last through the course of the day.
All right. Well, I think that's maybe about the best that we can do. Hope that helps maybe at least in part. We have maybe about 5 minutes left, actually maybe more like 2 or 3 minutes. Let me ask you to talk about some other kinds of medications. There are some medications that are pain relievers that can help people, but there are other sorts of things that are used as well. What other sorts of things are options?
Well, one of the biggest things that I think makes the life of a migraineur, a patient with migraines, more acceptable is the whole category of preventives. There are a number of preventive medications, and if taken appropriately, they can be very helpful. These include the tricyclic antidepressants, some of the seizure medications, some of the other antidepressants, beta blockers and calcium channel blockers. And if used appropriately and if you can get on one that doesn't give you too many side effects, sometimes that greatly decreases the frequency. Then the other really big breakthrough just in the last few years is the whole area of medication called triptans. The reason they're called triptans is that's the last two syllables of all their names. So it's naratriptan, zolmitriptan, sumatriptan. The triptans were originally assumed to be doing something to serotonin, and I think that they are raising the level of serotonin, but they may also be acting directly on the CGRP. The thing that's wonderful about the triptans is if they work for you, they do not cloud your consciousness, they don't generally make you fall asleep, they're non-constipating, they're non-habituating. But unfortunately, like almost any medication, if used to excess, can actually put you into a medication overuse headache syndrome as well.
And is that not also the case with just over-the-counter pain relievers? That can happen too.
It was originally most famous with the ergot derivatives and caffeine, but actually it's true of almost anything. Tylenol, Motrin, Advil, Sudafed, Actifed. So a lot of things can do it to you.
Yeah. One other thing I want to make sure to ask about, just because it's been in the news lately, is Botox. I believe that it's the case that it has actually also been approved as treatment for migraine. What does that do?
Remember the quote about the elegant solution that's incorrect? When it first came out, people were saying that it probably had to do with decreasing vasodilatation. But I don't think that the jury's back in on that one. I don't know exactly why it works, but it clearly does work for some people. It's not a drug of first choice. It is quite expensive. But for the right person, it may be a wonderful answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost out of time here. I guess just maybe one last question is, well, when do you call the doctor, or when do you decide that you need to see the doctor?
If the headache condition is completely different, that's a big warning sign. If any part of your body doesn't work, like the right side or the left side doesn't work, if you're going truly losing vision in either eye, that's a big warning sign. And lastly, if the nature of the pain is completely different, I shouldn't have said lastly, because if you have a really bad headache and it's associated with fever, that needs to be taken very seriously.
All right. Well, there we'll finish up here. Our guest, Robert Cranston, he's a neurologist at Carl in Urbana. Thank you very much.
Thank you.